All right, I'm rolling.
Yeah, me too.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Anklecast. I am Big Anklevich, podcaster, author, and carnivore, and I am here, as always, with Announcer Man. Announcer Man, say hello to everybody.
I press the button.
Oh, okay. There's a blast from the past. All right, and also with me, as usual, is Rish Outfield. Can you say hello to the folks at home as well?
Hey there, this is Rish Outfield, writer, podcaster, and prey animal.
All right. So, Announcer Man, you going to hang out with us during the show today?
I doubt it.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's what I expected. Okay, well, welcome everybody to the show. We're back with part two of the story you've all been waiting for. You've been hanging from that cliff for the resolution to Karma is My Boyfriend. We're back with part two. Is there anything we should say to the folks before we let them go on their way to listen to the story?
Well, they definitely have to have listened to the first part. If you want, you can catch everybody up right here. I never know whether to do that or not.
Yeah, I guess I can vaguely remind you, if you didn't listen to the first part of the story, though, you should go do that, because obviously the story's not going to be good if you start in the middle. But last time, our heroes were at a party, a weird party. Turns out that it was frequented mostly by gods of various pantheons from throughout history. And then our hero finds out that his crazy ex-girlfriend is also at this party, and he's very upset because he had a very bad experience with her.
I don't do dogs. I had a real bad experience, man.
What happened?
I had a bad experience.
And then he discovers that his crazy ex-girlfriend somehow has turned Karma into her boyfriend. And they have to do something to free Karma because, you know, they just can't let him be a captive of this horrible woman. So they decide they're going to go for it. And that's where the story ends. Our hero says, okay, I'm in. They're about to hatch their plan and put it into fruition, and let's see what happens. So let's check it out. Karma is My Boyfriend, Part 2.
Let's check it out. I'm not messing around. I'm serious here, guys.
Karma is My Boyfriend, Part 2. Nine. We spent the next 15 minutes hashing out a plan. Justice was going to distract Harper, and as soon as she stepped away, Glynnis and I would swoop in and get Karma out of there before she could return and put him back on his leash. We couldn't figure out exactly what would work as a diversion, though. I suggested that maybe Justice should just put that sword of hers to use, but the shocked looks I got from Glynnis and Justice both made me clam up and let them decide the best course. Hadn't Justice been threatening me with the damn thing just a minute ago? It was pretty simple in the end. They decided on the same activity that brought Justice to us an hour ago, just after we'd arrived at the party. A little drunken stumble combined with a blindfold as an excuse, and Harper could find herself doused in beer and in desperate need of a trip to the powder room to clean up. I agreed that it would work. Harper was vain enough that nothing would stop her from running off to clean up after an accident like that, not even the need to keep an eye on her little prisoner. So, Glynnis and I poised to jump into action as Lady Justice walked toward Harper, a stumble in her gait, and a full red solo cup of beer in each hand. Hey, Harpy, she said as she approached, loud enough that we could hear her from across the room. How's it going, Harpy, old girl? Enjoying the party? Hey, Buddha, have you met my new friend Harper? She's Karma's boyfriend. Karma is her boyfriend. She is Karma's... Then she struck. She stepped over her scabbard, tangled it in her feet in a way that looked perfectly natural, and tripped, falling hard onto Harper in her chair, both cups of beer dumping down her shirt. Harper gasped as she was completely soaked in amber suds. Her shirt was plastered to her skin enough that I could tell that she wasn't wearing a bra underneath. She was lucky her shirt wasn't white, or she could have been the first entrant in an impromptu wet t-shirt contest. Oh, blubbered Justice from Harper's lap. I'm so sorry. I guess I'm more drunk than I thought I was. She burst out in manic laughter. This has been such a great party. I'm so glad I met you and you want to be my new best friend. Harper angrily shoved Justice off her lap with a fiery glare. Get off me, goddammit! She shouted. Dozens of heads turned her way, possibly thinking she was invoking one of them. But then, seeing the mess from the aftermath of our ruse, either turned back or started laughing. Justice hammed it up for her audience, holding her now empty solo cups up and shouting, Anybody else need a bath? Then she turned the cups upside down over her own head. Only a small trickle of beer flowed out into her hair, but it still drew laughter from several of the onlookers. Harper pushed to her feet and looked down at her soaking wet top. She pulled the fabric with her fingers, and it slowly pulled away from her skin, coming away with a suction-releasing slurping noise. Damn it, I'm gonna have to wring this out at least. You might try washing it in the bathroom sink, Justice offered from the floor. Then it might not smell so much like beer when you're done. Do you want me to help? Harper's lip curled as she looked at Justice with rage. No, she fumed. You've already done enough. Harper grabbed her purse, took one step toward the bathroom, then stopped and turned back. She leaned over in front of Karma and whispered something to him that we couldn't hear. Then she reached into her bowl of sliced fruit, pulled out a chunk, and stuffed it into his mouth. Karma's already glazed eyes grew even less focused. Then Harper stood again and stomped away, slamming the bathroom door behind her. Get out! I heard her scream from inside the bathroom, and then the door opened again, and a crocodile-headed god came stumbling out, pulling his pants up and trying to zip the fly. It was time for us to spring into action. Come on, Glynnis, I said, and rushed over to Justice and Karma. Hello, Mr. Karma, I said, kneeling down in front of him where he sat in his chair. We're here to rescue you. My breast swelled with pride and self-worth. I felt like Luke Skywalker or something right now.
Mr. Karma is my dad,
the man said, grinned goofily, and guffawed at his own stupid joke.
You can call me Karma Chameleon. Wait, no. Call me Carmen San Diego. I mean, Carmen Miranda. Wait, no. You can call me...
Instead of finishing, he belched. His cheeks puffed with the air the belch summoned, and he blew it into my face. Because of the way he was acting, I steeled myself for the foulest beer breath stench, but I got quite the opposite. Instead, the sweetest smell I'd ever experienced washed over me. It was so nice. Heavenly, or maybe Olympian would be the proper word. Just amazing, anyway. In seconds, the smell dissipated, but it made me sad. I wanted him to burp in my face again. Glynnis came to my side. Come on, we've got to get him out of here. Who knows how long Harper will take? I wasn't worried. Harper might take a while, or maybe she wouldn't. It would be fine, probably, either way. Yeah, sure, We can do that if you want. Glynnis gave me a quizzical look. Yeah, I want. Grab his hand and let's pull him up. She grabbed his left hand and looked at me. She wanted something, I think. What are you doing? I don't know, I said. What am I doing?
Justice! Lady Justice!
Glynnis hissed, trying to get her attention without arousing too much suspicion among the partygoers.
Come here! I need your help! Something's wrong with Tyler!
Justice quit clowning around on the floor, playing up how drunk and clumsy she was, and pulled herself up off the ground. Once Harper had stormed off, most of the crowd had quit watching anyway. Back to their own conversations and shenanigans. Justice dusted herself off and came over. "What's wrong with Tyler?" she asked, looking at my face even though her eyes were covered with that blindfold. Could she see right through that thing? It sure seemed like she could. I thought about asking her about it, but then decided it wasn't worth the effort. "Yeah," I asked Glynnis. "What's wrong with Tyler?"
"Who's Tyler?"
Karma asked.
"See that one guy that... the one... oh, never mind. I don't really care."
"I'm with you, Carmen Miranda," I said. "I don't really care either. Screw that Tyler guy, whoever he is." "Did he eat some of the lotus fruit?" Justice asked Glynnis, a look of concern on her face. "I don't think so," she replied. "He didn't have time to do it as far as I know. We just walked right up here, and he immediately started acting weird." "Well, I think he's under its influence somehow," Justice concluded. "This is trouble. He's going to be useless to us. Do you think you can get Karma out and I'll drag Tyler out?"
"I can try," she said, grabbing Karma's hand and pulling. "Come on, buddy. The party's over. It's time for us to go hop in the car."
"It is?"
Karma answered, making no effort to stand or assist her in any way. All her pulling did little to lift the weight of the man. "Tyler, if you do not wish to taste the blade of my sword, you will rise and come with me down to your car," Justice said with a glare. Can you glare with your eyes covered? Somehow she managed it. I could feel the threat emanating from that angry face. It penetrated the haze that had come over me, and I managed to weakly stumble along beside her as she yanked on my hand. I was confused. What was going on? Was I leaving with Justice, but not Glynnis? How would Glynnis get home if we left in my car? I looked back over my shoulder, and Glynnis was there, pulling on Karma's hand, but he wasn't moving at all.
"What about Glynnis?"
I asked Justice.
"She's coming," Justice said. "Don't worry about her. She'll be right behind us."
Justice opened the apartment door and pulled me out into the hall.
"Are you sure?" I asked. Looking back at Glynnis, it didn't appear like she would be coming at all.
She had shifted around to put an arm around Karma and was trying to lift him out of his chair that way, but to no avail.
"She doesn't look like she'll be coming. She's wrestling with that guy over there, Carmen Miranda."
Justice stopped pulling for a moment and looked back. Worry crinkled her brow.
"Damn, she may need help."
She propped me against the back wall of the hallway and said, "Wait here. Don't move a muscle."
"Okay," I said. "Never wanted to move a muscle anyway. I'm only out here because you threatened to kill me with your sword and stuff."
Justice turned to go back into the apartment with the other partygoers when a booming voice with a Scandinavian accent said,
"Glynnis, I see you managed to ditch your boyfriend. What are you trying to do to old Karma Chameleon there?"
Justice stood in the doorway a moment, watching, then turned back to me, putting an arm around me and hoisting me up to a walking position.
"Where's your car? Do you remember?"
We started walking down the hall toward the elevators. Behind us, Glynnis walked out the apartment doorway, followed closely by Thor, with Karma flung over one shoulder like a sack of wheat. Karma was giggling like a little girl, apparently enjoying the ride.
"My car is down," I said. It was all I could manage. We'd left it in a parking space or something, I thought. "It's not on this floor."
By the peaks of Olympus! Glynnis! Justice shouted. Yes? Glynnis answered from right behind us. Where is your car? I took a picture so that we would remember, Glynnis said. Hold on. It's level 2, spot H16. The elevator dinged, and the door slid open. 10. I don't remember much from the rest of the night. I think I may have fallen asleep. I want to say that Thor might have brought me into my apartment over one shoulder while Karma was over the other shoulder. I vaguely remember looking over and seeing his head hanging like a pendulum, hair dangling down as the two of us swung back and forth with each of Thor's footfalls. It makes sense, since I know that Glynnis could never carry me in. Justice, despite being a god, didn't seem to have any strength-augmenting power either. So I would probably be beyond her abilities as well. I vaguely remember rain, or at least a bunch of thunder and lightning as well. I think I may have gotten sick and puked in the middle of the night, too. But that might have been a dream or a hallucination. I came to sometime the next day. I was going to say I woke up, but that wouldn't have been quite correct, because I don't think I was actually asleep when I finally came out of my funk. Instead, I had been sitting there gibbering and giggling when my mind, which had been slowly returning to me, finally snapped back all the way. Whoa, where are we? I suddenly asked. Is this our apartment? How did we get here? I asked those questions of Glynnis, assuming that she would be there, but she wasn't. Instead, it was Justice who was with me. Karma sat in our recliner, acting pretty much the same as he had the night before. Like an annoying drunk. You don't even remember? Justice asked. Wow, those lotus fruits are more intense than I thought. No, I said. The last thing I remember, we were going to grab Karma and drag him out of the party. I mean, it looks like we must have managed. What happened? I don't know what happened to you, Justice said. Somehow you got a dose of lotus fruit and turned into a useless zombie. In the end, Thor helped Glynnis carry Karma out of the party while I dragged your drunk ass out with me. Oh, great, I muttered. Thor, that's all I need. Dashing, blonde, muscular Thor to pick up my slack for me. Good news is that you've come out of it, Justice said. So it only takes a matter of time. I don't know how much longer it will take poor Karma over there to join you in the real world. But we do know that he will get there sooner or later, at least. Yeah, I guess, I said. Where is Glynnis? She said she had to go to work, Justice said. She left with Thor about 2 hours ago and asked me to babysit the two of you. She works today? That seemed weird. She didn't usually work Saturdays. I wondered if someone had called out sick or if she had a planned overtime day that she never told me about. Or, more likely, told me about and I forgot. Justice looked away. Yeah, that's what she said. She was going to work. Why did Thor go with her? Was he driving her or something? No, I think he was catching a ride with her or something like that, Justice replied. I couldn't quite say why, but this whole thing gave me a feeling of misgivings that I couldn't shake. I suspected it was the idea of Harper being out there, likely searching for us, on the trail of her boyfriend, Karma. I wondered if she knew I had anything to do with it. If she did, she at least had no idea where to find me. I didn't live in the same place that we shared when we were together. After fixing all the damage she'd caused, I ditched out of that lease as quickly as I could and found a new apartment on the other side of the city. She did still have my number, though. I hadn't changed that. I pulled my phone out of my pocket and confirmed that she did indeed know that I had something to do with it. There was a notification for 10 missed calls from the witch displayed on my lock screen. As I looked at the screen, the phone began vibrating in my hand, and the witch came up again, with call number 11. I let it vibrate, ignoring it until it was shunted off to my voicemail box. Shit. How long would it be before she found out where I was? She was no detective or anything, but she had found out about the Society of the Gods. She had found Karma, the god she had a vendetta with, and she had found the lotus tree to harvest its fruit and make him her hostage. How did she manage all of that? Did she do it on her own, or did she have some kind of help? Did she know the god of the hunt, if there was such a thing, that could track him down no matter where he hid? Justice, do you think we're okay here? I asked. I mean, are we safe, or is somebody going to burst in here any second and take Karma back from us after putting a bullet in each of our heads? I think we're safe from that, Justice said with a frown. Bullets aren't really a god's style. An arrow or a spear in the breast is much more likely a punishment for us to receive than a bullet. That's not helpful, I said. And that's not what I mean. I'm not arguing about the manner of our demise. I want to know about its likelihood. Well, we did kidnap a god, she said, so there could be repercussions. The fellow gods of his pantheon might take it as a slight and come to their fellow deity's aid, though that's pretty unlikely. We all like to squabble a lot. There's not a lot of that kumbaya stuff among us celestial beings. That's good because then there's Harper, Justice continued, cutting me off. She's a different story. That woman seemed pretty driven to me. I only talked to her for a few minutes, but my spidey sense never stopped tingling the whole time. Spidey sense? I asked. What the hell? Sorry, I was trying to put it in terms that you'd understand, Justice responded. I mean, when I talk to someone, I can tell more or less how fair and just they are. I can't see any visions of their misdeeds or anything. I just have a sense of whether they need to be brought to justice or not. And that bitch, ooh, baby, she needed some justice. You definitely weren't the only person she's done wrong in the past. Really? I squawked, feeling a little sense of satisfaction to hear my judgment of Harper repeated back to me. I guess it was nice to know that I wasn't the only one dumb enough to allow her to take them in. I mean, of course, what was I thinking? It was obviously not her first rodeo when she destroyed my life. Yeah, Justice said with a raise of her eyebrows. That girl is a piece of work. I wouldn't be surprised if she'd killed a person or two in the past, considering the tingling of my spidey sense that she gave me. Yeah, I said, and sat there in silence for a while. Then the question just burst out of me before I could stop it. What does your spidey sense say about me? She looked at me disbelievingly. Wait, don't answer that. It's probably better that I don't know. 11. My phone buzzed with a vibration to let me know that I had a text message. It was Harper. I know you did it, it said. Everyone there saw you. Sarasvati drew a picture of you, and I recognized you immediately. I ignored it, but it made me even more nervous. Harper called several more times throughout the day, and I ignored them all. But I did not send them to voicemail. I let them ring until they automatically went to the voicemail. I didn't want her to have a clue that I was getting her calls but ignoring them. I didn't know what difference that might have made, but I did it instinctively anyway. Strangely, Glynis didn't come home either. Well after any 8-hour shift at Dick's Sporting Goods might have ended, she still didn't come home. I texted her asking if she was okay, and she said not to worry, but that she was busy and wouldn't be home until late. Karma didn't snap out of his funk the whole day through. We theorized that it would take a long time because his dose had been so high. As we talked about it, I realized that when Karma had burped up lotus fruit breath in my face, I had been hit with a dose of the stuff. It was a strong enough narcotic that all it took was a breath of it to turn me into a goofball. I recovered quickly because my dose had been so low. Karma had been fed fruit for who knows how long. I wondered if it might be months or even years before the guy finally came back to himself again. He was a pain in the ass to care for. He sat there blubbering like a baby and didn't care for himself at all. We had to bring him food and help him to eat it. Worse was when we discovered that he also wouldn't be getting up and going to the bathroom on his own either. I hadn't realized that we'd signed up for a sort of elderly invalid care when we decided to take Karma from Harper to satisfy Justice. You were so gung-ho back when you were threatening me with your sword, I goaded Justice. How do you feel about that now that you're changing Karma's diapers? I had to run out to the Walmart that was open late to grab a few packs of Depends and some baby wipes so that we had the supplies we required. And yes, I even had to perform some of the diaper changes myself. Justice and I traded off, rotating the loathsome duty between us. I found myself wishing again and again that I'd never met Harper, so that I could never have gotten involved in this mess. Day progressed to night, and Glynis still didn't come home. I got more and more worried and texted her several more times. "I'm fine, I'm safe, but I don't think I'll be home tonight," was all I got in response from her. When I pressed as to why, I got no answer. I hoped that Harper didn't have her. For all I knew, Harper could be the one responding via text to me. Of course, if Harper did have her, she surely would have made sure that I knew, so it wasn't likely. What was going on? It was so unlike her to do something like this. She was usually such a homebody. She loved nothing more than to sit around the house on her time off and waste time watching TikTok or looking at Instagram. I'd had to convince her to go out to the party the other night with a hard press, but now she was just out. No explanation. She was just off doing something, even though there were heavy responsibilities at home, and she didn't care. She wasn't even coming home. Where was she sleeping that night? "Justice, do you know what's going on with Glynis?" I asked her after changing a particularly disgusting diaper on our gibbering patient. "Did she say where she was going or anything like that when she left?" She blanched and squirmed like a bug cut under a thumb. She obviously knew something, but didn't want to tell me. "I'm sorry," she said, "but it's not for me to butt into your relationship." What did that mean? Now I was even more worried. Was this a relationship thing? Were we having relationship troubles? I didn't think we were up until today. Yesterday, everything had been perfect. We were a happy couple with a great routine, and we loved living our lives. Or at least I did. Maybe Glynis didn't. "She's with Thor, isn't she?" I asked. Justice merely looked away, basically telling me she was with Thor while not telling me she was with Thor. Holy shit. Everything had gone so wrong. 2 days ago, I was happy and content with my life. Today, my girlfriend had dumped me in the middle of an emergency to run off and frolic with a literal god, while I was stuck at home changing diapers on an adult man and waiting for my ex-girlfriend to find us and unleash some horrifying, heinous plan for vengeance. Karma suddenly thrust a hand in the air, interrupting my shocked self-pity.
"I gotta go bathroom."
Justice jumped up, eager for a chance to leave the room, I assumed, and grabbed his hand, pulling him out of his chair. "That's great," she said. "Feeling a little better, are we?" In response, Karma burst out giggling uncontrollably. He might be coming back to himself enough to stop shitting himself, but he wasn't all the way back, that was for sure. Who knew how long that was going to take? But this was progress, at least. Not that I gave a shit anymore. Glynis was off cavorting all night long with fucking Thor. That damned Scando scumbag. The worst part was that the best I could do was say that I didn't deserve this. I couldn't deny that she'd traded up. He was a god. And while not a Greek god, he looked as perfect and as muscular as one. What was I? Just an average schlub. I was a 5 out of 10, maybe 6 tops. I had a dad bod despite no fatherhood to blame it on. Shit. Unbidden, tears began streaming down my face. I couldn't take this. I couldn't do this. I couldn't be here any longer. Justice would be fine with Karma. I had to get out of here. I got up and went to the bedroom and pulled a hat over my messy hair, went to the kitchen and pulled a bottle of water out of the fridge, stopped at the coat closet for my leather jacket, and reached for the doorknob. That's when everything exploded. Harper was here. 12. The door blew off its hinges, launching backward and straight into me. It threw me back about a dozen feet, clattering across the ground like a bottle cap. I slid to a stop against the far wall of the living room, groaning in pain. I was pretty sure at least a few bones were broken, particularly in my right hand that had been reaching for the doorknob. My ears were ringing, and my head wasn't working quite right. I tried to struggle to my feet, but my head kept leading my body right back to the ground. "Honey, I'm home," Harper said as she stepped daintily through the door. Her face became a radiant smile that dripped with pure venom. Holy shit. Harper had changed. I'd known for years that she was vindictive and controlling, but this was the work of a supervillain. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I let Justice pressure me into kidnapping Karma.
"The power of the sun compels you,"
a tall, muscular man said as he stepped through the door behind her. His hand was held out in front of him, and it glowed like he had a light bulb surgically implanted inside it. Behind him came another woman, this one with long, curly black hair and a bow in one hand. In fact, all three of them had bows in their hands now that my head was coming back to me enough to notice.
"The quarry quakes in fear,"
said the curly-haired woman.
"I love a good hunt."
"Harper, would you like to do the honors?"
the man with the glowing hand asked, holding out an arrow. "Thank you, Apollo. I believe I will," Harper said, taking the arrow from his hand and knocking it to her bow. I realized as I watched her draw the bowstring back to her ear that she was planning to put that arrow in me. I struggled to my knees, and she tracked my every move with the head of the arrow. I heard a twang and dove behind the couch. I didn't quite make it, but the arrow only grazed my calf as it trailed behind my body. I screamed from the pain.
"Good shot, Harper, but too much hesitation,"
Apollo said from behind Harper.
"Also, be sure to exhale before loosing the arrow."
The arrow hadn't even lodged in my leg, ricocheting off into the kitchen, but the pain was intense. I groaned with the agony. "It's finished, Tyler," Harper said with a sultry chuckle. "You don't stand a chance against Apollo, Artemis, and me. Just come out and let me finish you off." I clenched my teeth as hard as I could and concentrated on breathing deeply to subdue the pain. I most certainly would not let her finish me off. As the fire in my calf diminished, I noticed that heavy glass knick-knack I'd gotten at the Empire State Building on my trip to New York was on the carpet by my head. Hopefully, I could put my childhood baseball skills to use and hit Harper with something heavy and incapacitating. She probably had another arrow knocked, however. If I stood up to throw, I'd give her the perfect shot for putting it through my heart. I just needed a diversion. Maybe I could throw something at the other wall to distract her for a moment. "Harper Rose Madruga," boomed Justice as the door to the hallway slammed open. "I condemn your actions and decree that you will face justice." Or maybe this would work. I jumped to my feet, wound up as quickly as I could, and launched the knick-knack at Harper. Her eyes bulged when she noticed me out of the corner of her eye and spun to face me. She raised her bow, but couldn't get off a shot before the glass cube connected with her jaw. She screamed and dropped like a puppet with its strings cut. Her hands went slack on her bow, and the arrow she'd been aiming at me whisked into the ceiling. Artemis burst out laughing uproariously, pointing at Harper as she writhed on the ground, but Apollo turned a glare on her, shook his head once, and the laughter stopped as abruptly as it had begun. I glanced over at Justice, who flashed an impressed look my way. I raised my eyebrows as if to say, "Now what?" I had no idea what to do when fighting gods. These bastards were trying to fill me full of arrowheads, and my only idea was to run for my life. But even that had no chance because they were blocking the only exit. The exit in the other direction was out a window 5 stories up. Either Justice didn't understand my questioning look, or she had no better ideas because she just looked back with a blank face and stood rooted in her spot. "Ow!" Harper moaned from the ground, where she'd collapsed in a heap. She pounded her fist on the ground twice. Damn it, Tyler. That hurt. Now you really have to pay. She pushed herself to her feet and glared at me while she wiped the blood from her chin that was running from a split in her lip. Harper, what the hell is wrong with you? Now you've taken someone hostage. You need to change your ways before you hit that point of no return, I said. It wasn't very eloquent or convincing, but it was the best I could do. Reasoning with her was the only plan I had left. It was either that or a hang glider out the back window. Harper chuckled, then looked down at the blood she had just wiped from her face. Then, in what seemed like one motion, she grabbed the bow from Apollo, an arrow from her own quiver over her shoulder, and knocked it and let it fly. I didn't even have time to blink, let alone dodge. The shaft buried itself in my gut, and I fell over backward. Blood gushed from my mouth. Only mine came from within, not from a cut on my lip. I screamed in pain. It was like nothing I'd ever felt. It hurt so bad. My whole abdomen might as well have been on fire. I could see blood pouring from the puncture just above my belly button at an even higher rate than the blood I was coughing up with every gasping breath. Hand over Karma, Harper said to Justice. I know he's here. He is my boyfriend, and he will leave here with me. I will not, Justice replied. As I said before, Harper Rose Madruga, you stand convicted. You are guilty of a great multitude of crimes, a list to which you are adding with every second. I will not allow you through this door. He is my boyfriend, Harper screamed. He is your slave, Justice replied. You hold him prisoner to avoid the wrath of his power. He will bring you justice as well, and soon. He is not my slave, she screamed again. He is my boyfriend. He loves me. I'm everything to him. I gasped on the ground, feeling my life leak away with every ounce of blood that flowed from my stomach. I wanted to get up and do something to stop her, but I had no strength left to give. I suspected that my last breath would be coming soon, and I could already feel the room hazing over in my vision. Ow, 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 Harper shouted, grabbing her jaw where I'd beaned her with a tourist knick-knack.
Perhaps you shouldn't scream so much,
Artemis suggested in a hissed whisper.
It may relieve the pressure of the wound.
Perhaps, Harper growled in a venomous whisper.
I can heal your blow,
Apollo offered.
Would you like me to?
Oh, shit, yeah, Harper said. I forgot about that. Heal it now. Then she looked around, heard me suffering in my death rattle, and flashed a blood-stained smile. In fact, expand your healing out wide. Heal Tyler over there. I want to kill him a second time for how bad he made my face feel. One arrow to the gut wasn't enough. He deserves a dozen. Apollo chuckled.
You were born in the wrong era, my dear Harper. You should have lived in the days of Achilles and Alexander.
He waved his hand, and the arrow was yanked from my abdomen as if it had been pulled by a bodybuilder. It hurt twice as much as it had going in, and I screamed, but only for a moment. Within me, things were changing. The pain receded to just a dull ache, and then vanished like smoke. I looked down at my belly. There was blood there, but it was only on the surface. There was no hole for it to flow out of any longer. My breath slowed from quick gasps to deep, steady breathing. I was going to live. Possibly only to be killed once again by a vengefully insane person, but I had a second chance. I struggled to my feet and looked at Harper. She looked better than ever. She smiled at me, and her teeth were no longer bloodstained. "Looking good, Tyler," she said, and raised her bow at me again. "Let's change that, huh?" She drew back the bowstring to her ear. The bow flexed, potential energy building, ready to thrust an arrowhead through my heart. I took what might be my last breath, unless she decided to heal me again so that she could kill me a third time.
Remember to exhale before loosing the arrow,
Apollo whispered to her. Harper exhaled, and the string snapped. It whipped away from the arrow, its potential energy dissipating, leaving the arrow to slip from her fingers and uselessly clatter on the floor. The two halves of the bowstring left bloody hairline gashes on Harper's face. What the hell? She said, a hand going to her face to soothe the cuts.
Your bowstring snapped,
Artemis said. I can see that, but why? Harper barked. This was Apollo's bow. It's not a mortal bow that we got from the local sporting goods store.
You're right,
Artemis replied.
That is weird.
Fuck it, Harper said, fed up with the delay. Apollo, why don't you just kill him with a sunblast? I'm over this shit. The god raised his hand and it began to glow. In seconds it was white hot, but then it began to fade again. Soon it was merely the same color as the rest of his flesh.
Oh my, what's going on?
He wondered. There was a click, and the door that Justice had been protecting swung open. Karma's face appeared in the space, and I could tell right away that something had changed. This was no longer the man that we had been caring for since the kidnapping at the party. He would not be soiling his depends or cackling away at some joke that only he had heard. He said nothing, only looked at Harper sternly. Karma, honey, there you are, Harper said. Come with me, it's time for us to go. Karma made no move to obey. The stern look continued. He blinked slowly and said,
No.
Karma, Harper said again, but this time with less false warmth. The venom was starting to flow. Come over here and... She broke off, and something strange seemed to happen to her face. Half of it went suddenly slack. Harper's eyes bulged, but not together, separately. She stumbled to the side, crashing into Apollo, garnering a look of annoyance on his perfect face. We looked talent far last time, Harper said to Apollo, and her eyes bulged again with fear. Something was wrong with her, and she seemed to realize that now. Whatever she'd meant to say was not what had come out. The words she'd managed didn't go together and made no sense. She struggled for a word, and then, Holy shit, I thought. She's having a stroke. She's having some kind of massive stroke. As the thought came to my head, I saw blood suddenly start running from her nose. Harper grunted and dropped to the ground in a heap. Apollo let her fall. He looked down at her and nudged her with his toe, but she didn't move. He could heal her like he did for me earlier, but the look of disgust on his face didn't make me think that he would.
It looks like this hunt has come to an end, sister,
Apollo said.
Let's be gone.
He turned and walked briskly out, and Artemis trailed quickly behind him. Shit, I said. I'm going to have to be the one who saves her life again, it seems. I ran over, felt for Harper's pulse, which was still there and seemed relatively strong. First she gets hit by a bus and I save her. Then she kills me. Then she has a stroke and I'm going to save her again. Why do I do this crap? I reached into my pocket, pulled out my phone, and dialed 911 for the second time for my monstrous ex-girlfriend. 13. A 911 operator talked me through the first aid I could give Harper as we waited for the ambulance to arrive and the paramedics to take over. They headed away with her, and their flashing lights disappeared into the night. She didn't die, but she will never be what she was before again. Karma really took her down a peg. She won't be recovering this time. Justice and I tried to clean up as much of the mess from Apollo's entrance as we could. She did me a favor and called Hephaestus over. Apparently, he owed her a favor for something she'd done for him hundreds of years ago. I guess you can keep a favor in your back pocket like that if you're a god. That's pretty nice of you to waste that favor on the likes of me, I said, after saving it for so long. You earned it, Tyler, she said. Hephaestus made short work of the damage to the door frame and other spots in the apartment. By the time he left, the place looked as good as new, probably better than new considering who had fixed it. I'd never seen it when it was new. It definitely looked better than I'd ever seen. It wasn't worth taking an arrow in the guts to get the repair job, but it was nice. Worse was when my eyes snapped open as I tried to sleep that night because I realized that no one likely knew that Harper was in the hospital on death's door. She'd been here with a couple of mythical beings who seemed very elitist and snobby. They were cool with Harper when she seemed special and powerful, but now that she had been reduced to a husk of her former self, they certainly wouldn't be stopping into the hospital to visit. Her significant other had actually been a hostage that she was controlling with narcotic fruit. Karma had left only moments after Apollo and Artemis. None of them would be calling Harper's parents to tell them what had happened. I didn't have her parents' phone number, but I might be able to get it off her phone with a visit to the hospital. I didn't want to be involved in this any more than Apollo, but I felt obliged for some reason. Why was I like this? She had shot an arrow in my guts and basically killed me. If the supernatural hadn't been involved, I'd be dead already. And yet, here I was, seeing to my murderer's affairs for her, because she was incapacitated. Glynis never came home. She had me pack up all of her things for her and sent Thor out to pick them up. I heard through the grapevine that their relationship blazed hot, but burned out quickly. She never tried to come back to me afterward, though. I guess she understood that she'd burned that bridge right down to the ground the way she'd disappeared in the middle of a crisis. Hopefully she got what she wanted out of that relationship. I hate that I was compared to another man and came up wanting, but I don't get too upset about it, because the man was a god. Of course I lost. Justice came with me to the hospital the next day and gave me moral support as I struggled my way through notifying Harper's parents. They were sad when I told them the news, and a little surprised, but I think that was because they'd expected her to come to different harm than just a massive stroke. With all the stuff she'd pulled over the years, I think they'd expected to find she'd been involved in some sort of revenge killing instead. When we got back to the apartment, Justice pushed me against the wall and forcefully and passionately kissed me. I was stunned, and took a moment to warm to her advances. I couldn't believe that I was making out with an actual god. When she took off her blindfold, however, and tied it over my eyes, I knew this was serious. I spent the most amazing night of my life with her, but I couldn't enjoy it as wholeheartedly as I should have. In the back of my mind, I kept wondering whether she was doing this because she wanted to, or because she thought, after all I'd been through, that I deserved it, and she owed me a little justice. All right, everybody, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the story. I hope you enjoyed the big finale of Karma is My Boyfriend. We got to see how our friend Tyler managed to save Karma, and what happened to old evil Harper, who is quite a piece of work. So what did you think of the ending, Rish? Were you surprised that I just didn't let Tyler die when he gets shot with an arrow?
I was not surprised. You had set us up to want Tyler to succeed, and I figured it would be just too easy to let... the story would be shorter if you had intended for Harper to just murder Tyler. But when Glynis left with Thor, I became nervous, and it turned out that I was right to be nervous. You were right to be jealous, but I shagged her, baby. I shagged her rotten. And I felt like, even though it's a happy ending, it is, anybody in a relationship is on perilous ground. When you open up yourself to another person, you open up the possibility that you can be hurt. And this character of Tyler seems like a really solid, decent person. And all the stuff that he was doing to help Karma, was really altruistic. And so he didn't deserve to get to lose his girlfriend. He didn't deserve to get cheated on. And so I think I felt what you wanted your reader or your listener to feel. And so I was happy that things worked out for him in the end. But if anything, I still feel like Harper got off easy. The fact that Tyler went to help her out, to check on her in the hospital, to inform the parents and all that stuff, was just like, wow, this is a good dude. Nobody would do this. And so, I'm not sure if we were meant to feel that way. But yeah, you had our sympathies with the character of Tyler.
It's interesting because Harper is the bad guy. And it's something I think we've talked about in the past. What do you do with a bad guy that's a girl? And then, you have a good guy that's a man. You can't have them fight. They can't just get in the ring and duke it out or whatever, because it wouldn't be a fair fight, even though Tyler's not Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone, I guess, if we're doing getting in the ring.
Well, but you mentioned Arnold Schwarzenegger, and when Total Recall came out, if you recall, Sharon Stone was his evil wife, who was actually like a sleeper agent. She was an undercover enemy. She was a bad guy, and they have a fight, a physical fight. And then, yeah, I think he shoots her at point-blank range in the face at the end of that movie. Now, that was 1990, and there was a little bit of blowback. The M word was used, even in 1990, about that. But imagine if somebody did that in 2024.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things that you have to deal with if you're going to do that. And so with the ending, I tried to figure out how I could have Karma take her out while not really taking her out, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't.
You know, I didn't want her to be killed. I didn't want Tyler to have to kill her or fight her or any of that kind of stuff. I wanted there to be just this, she's not dead. She didn't die for any of the things that she's done, but she, I guess, got her just dessert. She's incapacitated. She's going to be basically a vegetable for who knows, maybe her whole life, whatever's left of it.
Huh.
That was my compromise, I guess, how you take out the evil woman with a man as the hero. Although I guess Karma was a dude and he was the one that kind of sort of took her out. So maybe it's still misogynistic. I don't know.
Well, if you choose to see it that way, you have chosen to see it that way, but you did take pains to make it less so. I mean, Tyler does throw that ornament, New York City, what do you call something? A souvenir.
Knick-knack.
And hit her in the face with it. But I feel like you had her be enough of a threat. She was a super, super bad egg. And I don't think I've seen a lot of characters like that in your writing. You know, she was a human being. But at one point, Justice speculates that she has killed people before.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so yeah, I feel like you you made sure we knew that this person was deserving of whatever their fate might be.
But yeah, I don't know. I wonder sometimes with endings, because I've been known for making such dour endings that people don't even, they don't listen to this show anymore because they're tired of listening and then just feeling bad when the story is over. Huh. So I have zero listeners left. Well, maybe one or two. Two? There's a few people that are sadomasochist types that, they just enjoy the suffering.
Well, you laugh, But the only reason you would laugh is if you didn't mean it. Like, if you, did you ever consider killing Tyler? I wouldn't think so.
Not with this story. And that's what I think I've mentioned that a few times recently, just talking about how I used to really be into that kind of stuff. I don't know what it was about me that that made me gravitate towards more sad endings, bad endings, disturbing endings. In a lot of cases, you know, it's what you expect if you're writing a horror story or something like that. You're not going to be that surprised if your heroine or hero does not make it through in the end. You're not going to be that surprised when Jason jumps up out of the water and takes the hero that you thought was safe down under with him.
That was just a dream.
Oh.
There's a difference between a horror story and a horror movie. Most of the time, the filmmakers are too cowardly to actually let evil triumph. They will test their movie over and over again and then specifically say, now, what did you think of the ending? How many, raise of hands, how many of you thought right. It was okay that Satan triumphed in the end? And to me, it's just like, wow, these guys are cowardly. You see it over and over again, where it's just like, nope. Even if it's a franchise and you know the killer is going to come back again and again, they have to have some faux happy ending because they don't have the nuts to say, and then Freddy won, the end.
Right.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I was just saying that I used to be really into that kind of stuff. And I wrote a fair amount of horror stories. And so sometimes it made sense, but other times I just would gravitate towards an ending that was a bit depressing. But as years have gone by, I guess I've changed. I don't know if somebody said something that made me feel like I need to change. Maybe it's like the thing that you once talked about where you're just like, yeah, if a guy has a problem and he does something and he beats it and that's the end, then that's a short story. But if he has a problem and he does something and fails and then does something else and fails and does something else and fails and then finally succeed, well, then you've got a novel. I don't know if somebody said something like that to me that made me, I don't remember anything like that. But yeah, I have worked more towards doing things differently recently. I don't want my characters to lose out in the end so much anymore. I don't know, like the last story that I had on this show, I messed with you because you were listening to it. We didn't talk about it because I didn't include you on the episode because I had to get it out really fast. So I just recorded the episode myself, edited it, posted it because I wanted to get it out before Christmas hit. But the story was Klaus Kringle. And in the story, a guy's kid turns into vapor and gets sucked into this little snowman bobblehead. And I remember at one point you texted me, what, Ryder got sucked into a bobblehead. And I texted you back saying, oh yeah, just wait till you get to find out just how hideous his death is at the end. Because you hadn't finished. You're like, yeah, I listened to like the first part of your story. But it was a long story and you hadn't finished it. And then later when you finally did finish, you're like, you lied to me. And I thought it was funny because I suspected you would believe it because of my reputation. And, you know, you always give me a hard time, particularly about it. You know, you'll send me like pretend covers for collections of my stories called A Very Small Pine Box.
And other stories.
Yeah, stories by Big Anklevich where the child dies at the end. Stuff like that. And I don't know. What did you think of the ending of that story, Klaus Kringle? You didn't get to discuss it at all on the show, so now's your chance.
Well, it's been too long now, but absolutely I believed you when you texted and said, how did you enjoy his gory death or something like that? And in retrospect, it was a funny thing to say because you set me up to expect it and then we had a happy ending. And I want to say a happy ending for once. But no, you've been switching it up from time to time. And you know, as you get older, the enjoyment, the challenge of how am I going to get my characters out of this can be a personal reward. Do you know what I mean by a personal reward? Like sometimes, what you and I are doing is pretty thankless. And maybe somebody will contact you and say, oh, I really liked Klaus Kringle. Oh, dude, I really liked Karma as my boyfriend, man. Thank you. But not usually.
Yeah, it's pretty few and far between.
Sometimes the reward is the feeling you get when you say, hey, that one was a good one. Or, hey, I was clever enough to come up with this way out for the characters. And sometimes you don't want it to come out of nowhere. So you have to go back and put the seeds of that earlier in the story. But it feels really good where you're like, shoot, how am I going to get my characters out of this? And then through sweat, through mental gymnastics, you figure it out.
Yeah, it can be its own reward, writing. I did really enjoy writing this story, and I'm glad that I finally did get around to it, even though it had been so long since Marshall's contest had already ended. But yeah, as we said last time, it wouldn't have worked. You can't have a two-part story on Marshall's contest. It was allowed to be one part only. It had to be, I don't know, what do you say, 7,500? I don't remember what the cutoff was, but about half of what I actually wrote.
If it was 7,500, that's a lot of words.
Yeah.
Like if you had to guess, how long was Karma is My Boyfriend?
I'm pretty sure it was 15,000.
Oh, okay. So that's double the length that it could be.
Yeah, exactly.
But like he ran one that was a runner-up, was the second place winner just the other day. And the presentation of the story was an hour. So, you know, that's not a very short story, at least in audio form. And right now you're writing every single day. And not just writing every single day like I would. You're doing like 1,200 words every single day. If you had been doing this a year ago, when Marshall's contest was new, you totally would have finished the story in time for the contest.
Yeah, but it still would have been way too long.
Right, that's what I was going to say. But would you have had to cut it down when you were done? Or would you have like pushed the brakes while you were writing the story itself, knowing, okay, I can't go into that. This exchange has to be like one or two lines and that's it, because I know it has to be 7,500 words. Which is more likely?
My guess is I would have written the story and either thought, okay, well, that was fun, but I can't submit this because it's way too long. Or maybe I would have gone to Marshall and begged, come on, please, please bend the rules for me. I wrote this whole story and it's just for you and it's good and you'll like it. Take it. It's longer. Or I would have gone, okay, well, let's see. I'm going to have to remove the scene where we see Glynnis meet Thor at the Dick's Sporting Goods.
Good point. Yeah. We would have just had her tell Tyler basically the gist of the situation.
Yeah, and I probably would have gone through and just cut out large chunks of it and just been like, okay, so we're getting rid of this and this and this and this, and then I would have kept the original version. That would be the real version, and probably sent a bare bones, stripped down version to Marshall, which then would have lost the contest and would have been a total waste of time to even have created. But that's the way it goes, isn't it? I may like happy endings in stories, but I don't believe in them in real life.
You and I have something in common because I did something very, very similar for one of Marshall's contests where I had an idea and I knew it was just going to be way too big for the contest, but I went ahead and wrote it anyway. And it just would have been impossible, or it would have been highly compromised, to send it in for his show. And so I guess what I'm saying is we are brothers.
Brothers, we are brothers. Hey, hey, hey. Ba-da-ba-pow.
So Let me ask you a question, since I'm asking it anyway. How did you decide who to populate the party with?
It was kind of at random. I mean, I looked through various pantheons. I mean, obviously there's the obvious ones that we know of, like the Greek pantheon. You could say the Roman pantheon, which is more or less the Greek pantheon with different names. There's a lot of people know Egyptian pantheon, or at least some of the Egyptian pantheon, and the Norse pantheon. And I figured, okay, I'm going to use some of those. I think just the idea, I'm not sure exactly how I landed on, say, Thor. Why was Thor in that story? I don't know. I had a lot of fun with him. Maybe just because he was a guy that was at Dick's Sporting Goods. Maybe that's why I decided, oh, I need a brawny dude that wants to play sports. I don't know. I should have got like Mercury to be the guy instead, someone who's really fast. Basically, the main thing that I was looking for is I wanted it to be really varied. I wanted it to be obvious that we were getting things from everywhere. It wasn't just one pantheon. We were getting all of them. And so I went through and tried to find as many different things. I wanted to get in some Asian pantheons as well. And hopefully you recognized some of them, and some of them maybe you had to look up, or maybe you just thought, I wonder what that one is. I don't know. But it was fun, and I like the diversity, I guess, of the gods that were in there.
I didn't know that Karma was a person. Did you just know that, or did you do some research to try and determine what the aspects of Karma would be like?
I don't know that Karma is a person, to tell you the truth. That may be something that I just made up.
I mean, Lady Justice is a symbol in my mind, but if I looked and found out, no, there used to be a god called that, or a goddess called that, or a, you know, there were people that believed that she existed and that she would watch, and eventually she would make the scales balance. Because essentially that's what happens in the story.
I think Justice became a character by chance. When I started the story, she was not a character. I started writing, and I had him trip over her sword as they walked in. But that was going to be the extent of it. Karma was, I mean, I would say, I don't know, like you were asking, he's a dude or not? I don't know if he is a dude, if he actually has a personification, or if he's just an idea. But the Taylor Swift song that says Karma is my boyfriend turns him into a person, I suppose. And since I'm kind of basing, or I'm inspired by that song, I guess, or by that line, I made him a character. And then after that, I was just thinking about other personifications of concepts, you know, and Justice is one of those. And Death is one of those. I suppose there's more, but they're not leaping to mind. But, you know, I thought about those and then putting them with gods, which I think the line where she says Karma is a god is where that came from as well. And so now I have a party full of gods, and so I put them all in there too and just mixed them all in. And it's kind of weird that Justice wound up being in the story at all. I didn't have her planned. She just kind of weaved herself in and went from there.
Well, it's fun how these things come about, sometimes at random, sometimes because of inspiration, sometimes because of desperation. And in this case, you know, a bunch of things conspired to write this story. This is not a story that you've had kicking around in your head for 5 years. It just came from the necessity of doing something with the words you were given.
Yeah.
And now that it's done, I mean, it's time to move on to the next one. But that's what I love about these contests, is you end up writing stories you never would have written had that contest not happened.
Yep, that is definitely something that's pretty cool. Speaking of that, we promised the folks last time that they would get to hear the second story that was written by an AI for Karma is My Boyfriend. Because Marshall wrote one, or had AI write it for him, and we shared that with everybody last time around. But for fun, because when the story was supposed to be written, it was right about the time that ChatGPT was becoming a big thing. And for fun, I got on there and had ChatGPT write a little story using the words karma, caulk, hello, and one other fabulous word. What was the last one? Pupil. There we go. Yeah. This one, you can tell that maybe, I don't know, maybe AI is making some fast advancements in its abilities, because this one was written 6 months or more before the other one was, and you can kind of tell. Let me read it for you and let's see how it goes. Karma had always been fascinated by the workings of the human eye. As a scientist, she had spent her life studying the intricacies of the pupil and all the ways it changed in response to light and emotions. But when she finally got her chance to test her theories on a real live subject, she never could have predicted the outcome. Hello? She called out, her voice echoing in the empty lab. The room was filled with all sorts of strange and fascinating equipment, but her focus was on the large machine in the center, which was humming softly as it performed its task. She had been working on the device for months, perfecting every last detail so that it would be as precise and effective as possible. And now, finally, she was ready to test it on a real person. She had found a willing volunteer, a young man who had offered to participate in her study in exchange for a large sum of money. As the man sat down in the machine, Karma carefully applied a bead of caulk to his eyelid, securing the small sensor in place. She flipped a switch, and the machine hummed to life. The pupil of the man's eye dilated, and Karma watched in awe as the image on the screen in front of her began to change. At first, everything seemed to be going according to plan, but then suddenly, the pupil of the man's eye began to constrict, and the image on the screen grew darker and more distorted. Karma's heart began to race as she realized that something had gone wrong. But before she could even begin to try to fix the problem, the machine let out a high-pitched screech, and there was a blinding flash of light. When the light faded, Karma found herself standing in a strange, dark place with the young man nowhere to be seen. She frowned, confused and disoriented. She had always believed that her work was in the service of advancing science and improving the lives of others, but now she realized that perhaps the universe had other plans. The concept of karma was beginning to make a lot more sense to her. And that's the end. Yeah, so that story is kind of terrible. I don't know why we even bothered to share it. And it's really short, at least. I guess there's that.
But you didn't tell it how long to make it.
I don't remember that I did, but I don't think so. Maybe I said 1,000 words or less. I don't remember. Too long ago for me to be able to vouch for that, I'll have to say.
I don't know. People are really afraid of AI. And then there are other people that are just... And maybe it is still a different way of being afraid of it. That it's just... They hate it. Noam Chomsky called it the plagiarism machine. The story said she realized that the universe had other plans. And I thought, I like that sentence. Oh, no. But yeah, the story is not really a story. Maybe I said that about Marshall's last week.
Well, Marshall's story, you said it had the seed of something. Like if you were a good writer, you could take that story and expand it and work with it and probably turn it into something.
Whereas this story, I don't think you could. It wasn't a story. Nothing happened in there. I guess a woman who studies pupils gets a guy, puts him in a machine, and then gets transported somewhere else, I think, is maybe what happened in that story. I don't know. There was nothing to it, and it felt very empty. So in that particular case, there's no need to be worried about AI, but maybe in other cases, and maybe eventually, we need to worry. I don't know. Does it worry you at all? Do you think of it being the plagiarism machine or anything? Do you get upset about it? Or
I haven't been upset about it up to this point. I was telling you yesterday that there was a speaker at the writers' conference that I went to where he made a joke at the very, very beginning of his... He was the keynote speaker, and at the beginning of his speech, he said, this was originally the subject I was going to talk about. And we all laughed because it was ludicrous. Nobody would ever do a keynote speech about that. And then he said, but out of curiosity, I asked ChatGPT to write me a keynote speech based on that. And then he read, I think, three paragraphs from it. He said, yeah, I'm going to skip and skip and skip it. Here's, the first two paragraphs. This is the final paragraph. And I thought, that sounds like something a person wrote. And I could see somebody being really afraid of that. But thus far, it hasn't been impressive. I guess it's impressive in that it sounded like something a person wrote. But it sounded like something that a high school student wrote the day before it was due in like an hour or whatever, where all of the sentences were rudimentary. There was no art to any of it. It was made up on the fly. And if, let's say, there was a machine and you pumped all of the episodes of The Twilight Zone into the machine and said, watch all of these, and now I want you to write me a 30-minute Twilight Zone episode that feels like the ones that you watched, with a twist ending that maybe you didn't see coming. And it was able to create something like that. And you go, oh my gosh, that twist totally worked or whatever. This feels like a Twilight Zone episode. Then I would be afraid. But we've had like so many Twilight Zone imitators over the past 60 years, and even they can't pull it off where you go, that felt like a Twilight Zone. That was really good. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like more times than not, the new Twilight Zone episodes, they fail. They don't work. And that's what people, human beings, sitting down and doing it. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that AI may be able to write something that is equal to what a talentless writer that didn't have any passion did. But they're not going to be able to create art yet. I don't know, you said that there was a 6-month gap between your AI story and Marshall's AI story, and you felt like there was progression in the talent of ChatGPT.
Well, I mean, I don't know that there's progression. It could all just have to do with the prompt, what I wrote versus what Marshall wrote. Marshall asked it to make a fantasy story with gods and personifications, etc. He kind of patterned it a little bit out after my story. And that may have worked better. I think all I said was a science fiction story with these four words, which probably left it too wide open. Like, for example, since we're talking AI, the episode art for today's episode and the first half episode was made by AI. There's an AI image generator, and I think artists are probably even more fearful than writers are of AI and what it can do, because you can just tell it a couple of things and it will give you a good picture. I mean, obviously, it doesn't always give you a good
picture.
Let
me interrupt. It may give you a good picture.
Sometimes you have to do a lot of iterations before you get the good picture, and you get the one that only has two legs instead of three or four, some backwards and some forwards, and a hand that goes down and becomes a leg. Some of the weird stuff that you can get. It's hard to get it to give you exactly what you want, but you can get something that will work if you're open to any old thing. And we had trouble with this one. I asked you to do, because you were doing covers for your stories to put them up on Amazon, I think. And I said, hey, can you have it do a cover of Thor and Shiva? I said Shiva, but what I really meant was Kali. You know, drinking beer at a house party. And you tried a bunch of iterations of trying to get that. And every time it would not quite do what you wanted. We were trying to get Kali with blue skin and four arms. And the funny thing is, when you want four arms from an AI art, it doesn't want to give them to you. It only gives them to you when you don't want them.
Yeah, I could not get it to do multiple arms no matter what. I explicitly said four-armed goddess Kali, and it wouldn't do it. And I think it came up with a couple of images that looked really good. But either Thor looked really good and Kali looked terrible, or Kali looked good, but you couldn't tell that it was Thor because you just saw like the back of his head. Or there were a couple where both looked good, but Kali had bare breasts. And I didn't tell it to do that, but it kept doing that.
Sure you didn't.
When I would say, hey, I want her skin to be blue, it wouldn't do it.
Or it would do it, but also make Thor blue.
Right. Okay, that's a good point. Yes. It made Thor blue. I feel like this is a really powerful, cool tool. And I know that people hate it. But I feel like the people that hate it and are fearful of it and all that are probably like somebody who said in 1930 that you can't write a good story on a typewriter. It has to be handwritten for it to be good or whatever. It's just like, well, you're still writing the story. It's just a tool that you're using. And maybe it's not the same thing, because this is actually creating art instead of us taking a pen and paper and doing art. But it's we're trying to get an image that evokes the story that we have written. And I can live with that. But it's never perfect. It's never exactly right. I think you either just were too frustrated with me and you're like, just tell me what the program is and I'll do it. Or we had run out of time and it was like 1:30 in the morning for you. And you're like, dude, we've been doing this for 2 hours.
No, when I had you do it, I was at work and you were, you know, trying to do it and you were texting me, oh, here's an option. Oh, here's it. And then you called me. And so I was trying to talk to you and I was just like, okay, I got to get back to work though, because they're going to fire me if I keep this up. And so I asked you what it was. And then when I went home that night, I figured, oh, I'll mess around with it and see what I can get. And I tried different gods and concept personifications, etc. And so I eventually settled on Thor and Death having a beer. But even that didn't come out quite right, because Death was more just a guy with face paint instead of being like a skeleton. I went in and I colored his neck white, and I think I colored his hands white as well in Photoshop. They don't look good. It looks pretty terrible, to tell you the truth. But mostly it doesn't matter because nobody's looking closely at it. They just see it and then they move on. So it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, it's not great. But I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. I'll go with that. It really gave me the idea of what I wanted, which was God's personifications drinking beer at a regular old house party, like in some apartment. You know, the ones that you were sending me were good looking, but they also like looked like they were in a medieval tavern or something like that every time. And I was just like, okay, that's not quite right. So I was trying something different, and that one really worked for me. So I figured I'd give that a shot. You know, I have heard one of those things where they said, you know, yeah, you know, people who do this kind of stuff for a living, maybe they need to instead learn the skill of writing a good prompt for an AI to make art for them, because that's going to be the thing that all the jobs are for in the future. You'll have a job writing a prompt for an AI to act on. I've heard that sometimes people talk about technology, you know, there's like self-driving cars and stuff that are sort of starting to come in now. And, you know, people are worried about that. And, you know, what'll happen to all the guys who drive trucks for a living? There's nothing you can do about it, though. You know, it's here. It's the technology is here, and it's not just because you stamp your foot and throw a fit gonna be uninvented. And somebody, us, one of the 8 billion people in the world, is going to take it and run with it. And so, you know, you might as well run with it as well and find the way to make it work best. You don't want to be the guy who was the head of the company that made the whips for the buggy drivers, you know, back in the early 1900s. And they're like, no, we'll always be a buggy whip company. And then, of course, everybody got cars and nobody rode buggies anymore. And so you making something for a buggy was unnecessary. And the world had moved on. That is the way of things, really. The world is always moving on. I guess humans just have to be able to adapt with it. And I suppose AI is no different. We're going to have to figure out how to adapt with it and make sure that the world doesn't move on without us or move on right over the top of us.
Well, I would be curious for the people who are listening, if they, I would like to ask people what they thought of, geez, I don't even know how to put it. What, going back to something we said earlier, because of Big's reputation for not sparing the characters in his stories, is that a strength or is that a weakness? Knowing that he might kill a child, that he might have the whole family perish, does that ratchet up the tension in every one of his stories? Because you never know what he's going to do. Boy, this sounds like a quote for the back of the flap, for your back flap on your novel, Big.
All right, I'll have to transcribe it and save it for the next collection I put out.
But something that I don't think you've talked about on here for some reason, you should be, but you don't, is that you're actually making some of your writing available on Amazon that people can buy. You set some kind of goal. Was it a goal for every week that you're going to put something out, or you're just...
Yeah, the goal was every week, although I knew I wouldn't be able to do it every week. So it was more like for this month is what I was shooting for. I knew, especially off the top of the month, that it was going to be difficult because I haven't published anything since this time last year. And so I've kind of forgotten the process, and I have to go back and figure it out again. And so I've been working on that. I mean, the first week of the month, I was just gone. I was out of town and went on a cruise. And so I didn't even have internet. So I wasn't able to do any of that stuff then.
Okay, I got to interrupt you again. People that are listening, he didn't have internet. And yet he still sat down and wrote 1,250 words each day on ice cruise.
I did. That is a good thing about a cruise is you tend to do a lot of sitting around. So I was able to get in some words. I'm working on that. I still plan. We're recording this the 20th of February. And I should, by tomorrow, have three stories published. I don't know that I will. I think I can start putting some of them out starting tomorrow morning when I get up and start working on stuff. But over the next week, I promise that I will get my four stories out for this month. But yeah, I'm trying to get all my stuff out, really. I want to get going, get it all available for people to have. I've put out two collections of short stories already. One of them is just regular SF short stories. And then the other one is a collection of Christmas short stories. And you can get those collections as ebook, as paperback books, as hardcover books. So you could collect them all. You could put them up on your shelf and show off your collection of Big Anklevich stories to all your friends. I know you would want to. And then they're all available separately as well as ebook downloads that you can get. So you can check that out. Search BD Anklevich on Amazon and see what stuff you haven't read before. I don't know. Hopefully there is something that you haven't heard before. Not enough of it, sadly, but we'll get there. I'm going to keep putting stuff out, and surely there's stuff that you're unfamiliar with that you would like to check out. Sometime soon, I'll put out another collection that has Karma is My Boyfriend on it and other new stories that I've been writing. I'm 10,000 words into it. I finished a novel, and then I finished a novella. This month, I finished the novella, and I've started into another story, which me and Rish would always joke about back in the days when we first started the Dune Steve. It was a story idea that I came up with years before, probably 10 years before five or six years before we started the Dune Steve.
But 20 years ago now.
20 years ago now, yes. And I thought, you know what? Since I'm writing every single day, why don't I finally write that story? And so I looked forever. I looked everywhere because I knew that I'd written an outline for this story. And I was like, I'm going to find that. And I finally did find it. I had to get out one of my old computers and plug it in and boot it up and search through the drive on that thing. And then I found it. I'm now more than 10,000 words into that story. I'm enjoying writing it. I think it's going to be a fun story, and maybe someday I'll share it with you. At the very least, I'll publish it on Amazon, and you can read it there. It's exciting to write stuff every day. I feel like I'm getting things done. There's something about actually achieving something that makes you feel good about yourself and makes you want to keep achieving, makes you want to achieve more. And so I guess I'm in that spiral right now. I don't know how long that'll keep up, but hopefully for good. That's my plan, is to make it keep up for good.
Well, that's inspiring, man. And if you weren't writing every single day, you wouldn't have written Karma's My Boyfriend either.
That is definitely true. I would not have gotten there. I've written Karma's My Boyfriend. I've written a novel called Caught Up in Christmas. I've written a novella, which is twice as long as Karma's My Boyfriend, called The Elephant in the Room. And now I'm writing The Alien Love Story, which I'm trying to decide what to call it.
Well, it used to be called Love Walks In, or Love Comes Walking In.
Right, from the Van Halen song.
But we'll see.
But I can't decide. I feel like that doesn't give you the science fiction feel that it needs.
The song that it comes from has one line where he says, "Some kind of alien, reach for the opening, simply pull the string and life comes walking in." And that is kind of what I'd like to get. I was looking at the lyrics for it and thinking, oh, maybe I can just steal a line of the lyrics. But none of them seem quite right. I don't know. Maybe it will just be Love Walks In, but I'm still thinking about the title of that one.
Well, you don't need to know that to finish the story.
That's true, yeah. I've written way too many stories without a title. Some of them never really get a good one, so hopefully this one will get one that just blows me away, and everybody else too. All right, well, I think we've gone on long enough. We're over an hour on our recording, and I'm going to have to cut it down. I'm going to have to just go through and slice it up like I would have with Karma's My Boyfriend if I'd sent it to Marshall, so we should stop.
Well, see, this is what happens when you only do one episode a month.
Yeah.
Is that we have so much to say and so many places that we could go with conversation of things that we've talked about over the last month and said, oh, we'll have to bring that up on the episode.
Yeah.
But oh well, I mean, hopefully people love that it's long.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope they enjoy it. I hope they actually listen to it. All right. Well, thanks everybody. If you're still hanging around and listening, I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks, Rish Outfield, for coming and hanging out with me and being here on the show every time.
Well, hey, I didn't just hang out with you right now. I also did the voice of a couple of characters.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I almost forgot to mention that. Yeah, Rish Outfield did a couple of voices last time around. He was the voice of Thor. This time around, he got to do a little bit more of Thor. But also, Rish got to do Apollo and Artemis. And I had the distinct pleasure of bringing Marshall Latham in to do the voice of Karma for us as well. So in case you were wondering when you heard those voices, that's who they were. And another thing that I'm always supposed to do, and I always forget, is to give my shout out to my good Patreon members. These are my lovely compression socks, Patreon members, because they're more supportive than the $1 non-athletic supporters. So anyways, shout out to Abby Hilton, Mark Shifley, and Steve Lindauer. Thank you so much for your support and for being a member of my Patreon group. All right, I guess that's it for today's show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Say goodnight, announcer man.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. And Rish Outfield, say goodnight to the folks at home.
Good night. He's my boyfriend.
All right, we'll see you, folks. See you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Galenis, I see you managed to ditch your boyfriend. What are you trying to do to old Karma Chameleon there?
My store just sucks.
Sarasvati drew a picture of you, and I recognized you immediately.
Is that how you say that? I probably had to check.
Sarasvati.
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 The following pronunciation is brought to you by pronouncenames.com.
Sarasvati.
Every one of them's different.
My computer said that it needed to update. And it couldn't proceed with printing labels until I did the update. And so I was like, all right, go ahead and update, figuring 5 minutes from now I'd be back in town. It's been over an hour and a half. And an hour ago, it was just saying, you know, updating computer, please wait. And it would say 11%, 12%. Now it finally finished. It finally ended. And it says, we couldn't complete the updates. Undoing changes. Don't turn off your computer. Bastard.
I hope you enjoyed the big finale of Karma is My Boyfriend.
I got to sneeze. Oh, wait, you'll just cut that out.
Yep, I suppose I could do that.
Well, but when you and I were in the room together, and I'd say, I've got a sneeze, you knew to be quiet, because my sneeze would drown out whatever you had to say.
That's true. That's true. We used to have to do that. That's one of the benefits of being in separate audio booths now, across the room instead of in the same room.
Yeah, I mean, this is all an outtake anyway, so it doesn't matter. But we recorded with Marshall just a couple of days ago, and it was me and Marshall in a room, and then you 1,000 miles away in Texas. And I had to get up and leave the room because of the echo between Marshall's connection and my connection. Even though we were in the same room, there was a delay that I was hearing through my headphones. So I had to leave and make it so we were in three different places for it to work, which you wouldn't think would be necessary. You'd think it'd be easier if you're all in the same room. But anyhow, on with your outtakes.
It would have been easier if I was in the room with you, I think. Then we all three would have been able to talk at once. But since I had to call in from far off Texas, made it a pain in the butt.
Well, maybe you could come next year in 2025. Maybe you could be in the room. At least consider it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if I can pull that off. Back to the beat, y'all. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot to mention we had some people do some voices for this one. Rish Outfield obviously did the voice. Yeah, can you not hear me?
Oh, you're not.
I am.
I hang up on you?
Oh, no. Love comes walking in. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what happened. It didn't hang up, but you were still, I could still hear you, and my phone wasn't, I was afraid my phone had died, although I don't know why that would have happened, and I would still hear you, but, okay, well, I guess let's finish up.